A decent suit, on Gamelon, seemed to involve light blue gabardine, silver braid, shoulder boards, and jackboots. As Devlin stood looking himself in the palace's guest room mirror, adjusting the high, throat-notched collar, Devlin had the uncomfortable feeling that he'd just joined the Luftwaffe. All he was missing was a gun belt and perhaps one of those stubby swords the pilots wore. "I look ridiculous," he announced. "You look dashing," Rena contradicted him. "Spectacular. It'll help him end his mood just looking at you. Just whatever you do, don't smile at her. I don't think she'd be able to stand it. Too much nervous tension, you know. She's probably going to give you quite a workout tonight anyway," she added, punching him in the shoulder. "Danger always makes her horny." Devlin went pink again and stammered, "Alrighty then," Rena went on breezily, shouldering him aside so she could check the alignment of the various accoutrements of her own dress uniform one more time. "Looking good, looking good." She winked at herself, raked back her scarlet bangs, and let them fall back down over one eye, then pivoted and said, "Okay, Carter, let's go. Doesn't pay to keep the Imperial family waiting." Devlin felt curiously naked without his long, battered gray coat, but with a last look he left it behind and followed the trimly uniformed pilot officer down to an anteroom off the Great Hall. Amanda was already there, dressed in the most elaborate uniform Devlin had ever seen her in, even more elaborate than the Gamelon Navy dress uniform she sported for formal occasions at school. She turned, her royal blue cape brushing the alloy floor slightly, and her face took on a controlled but genuine smile as she saw the two enter. "My goodness, Earthman," she observed, "you clean up rather nicely. This is the first time I've ever seen you in civilized clothing."
"So glad you approve," said Devlin dryly. "What's the procedure from here?"
"A fanfare will announce me in a few moments," said Amanda, growing serious again. "You will take my arm and accompany me. Kitorina will follow in her traditional place. I will present you to Father, and then we will dine. Father is very busy, which will work to our advantage. This should take only an hour at most."
"Well, good," said Devlin. "I should be able to keep from falling asleep about that long. I don't know if you've noticed, Amanda, but it's been a hell of a long day."
Amanda smiled again, slightly at that.
"I had noticed, yes."
"Listen, though," said Devlin nervously, "are you sure about that on your arm part? Isn't that kind of, I don't know, risky? I mean, maybe you've missed it, but your people don't exactly like Earthmen. It's not going to be very popular."
"I don't care about popularity," Amanda replied flatly.
"You are my guest, Earthman or not. You enter on my arm. Let Xenia sneer all she likes. It will be just another thing she one day pays for." From the next room, the fanfare began, muted by the doors. Amanda straightened herself and held out her arm.
"Take my arm, Devlin. It's time."
Devlin hesitated once more.
"Are you really sure?"
"Take it!"
she hissed intently.
"Well, all right then," he said,
and linked his arm through hers. The doors opened as they approached, and, following Amanda's lead, Devlin entered the Great Hall. This was, as its name suggested, a large, high-ceilinged room, rather like the nave of a cathedral, with a long table instead of an aisle, and a great chair at the table's head instead of an altar. Trumpeters stood along the walls on either side, blowing the fanfare in the old-fashioned manner. Armed guards in ceremonial finery flanked the entrances. Along the table, men and women, some uniformed and some in plain formal wear, given Gamelon formal fashions it was hard for Devlin to tell the difference, were arranged in two rows of 10. Amanda led Devlin to the two empty places near the head of the table, at the head chair's right, and Devlin Carter had his first good look at a head of state as Amanda's father rose from the chair to greet his daughter. Deslok I, Emperor of Gamelon, was a tall, ruggedly built man with a square-jawed, brutally handsome face, dark eyes and short blonde hair going subtly silver at the temples. Devlin couldn't guess at his age.
If the Gamelon lifespan were anything like the human one, and Amanda's appearance at 15 would seem to indicate that it was, he could be anywhere from 50 to a vigorous 120. He wore a uniform which was rather startling in its simplicity compared to many of those around him. A white, scarlet-collared, cavalry-style jacket and trousers, with black boots, a blaster belt, and a blue cape fastened at his left shoulder. It had no braid, no ribbons, no medals, no badges of rank of any kind, save the two simple golden pips on each tab of the scarlet collar.
"Amanda," said Deslock, "you are well?"
"Very well, thank you, Father. And you?"
"As well as can be expected," replied Deslock with a trace of irony.
"Father," said Amanda, her voice firm and gaze steady, "please permit me to introduce a friend of mine from the Worcester Preparatory Institute, Mr. Devlin Carter of Earth. Devlin, my father, Emperor Deslock the First."
Deslock turned to Devlin, his dark eyes boring into Devlin's rather intense winter blue ones. Devlin forced himself to look straight back and not flinch, hoping he didn't seem disrespectful in his attempt not to seem cowardly instead. Not certain quite what to do, he fell back on a mannerism he'd seen Caitlin, whose father taught an old Japanese martial art, use, and bowed with his arms at his sides.
"I'm honored to meet you at last, sir," he said.
Deslock stiffened to attention, the heels of his boots banging together with a sound like a gunshot in the mostly empty hall, and bowed in return.
"It pleases me to make your acquaintance, Mr. Carter," said Deslock as he straightened back to attention. Then he relaxed slightly and added in a more natural tone of voice, "I understand that we have you to thank for Amanda having reported on time to our little tangle with the Voldrani last summer."
I did what I could to help, sir," said Devlin, looking faintly embarrassed.
"Then the Gamelon Empire is in your debt," said Deslock. "That engagement provided valuable experience for our next Empress, after all."
Devlin felt a wave of hysterical laughter threaten to well up inside and engulf him. He fought it down with a tremendous effort of will and replied in an even tone,
"I'm afraid I'm not very political, Your Majesty. I'm glad I was able to help a friend. Nothing more."
As soon as he said it, Devlin cursed himself. What a stupid thing to say. Such an equivocation could be taken as offensive, if the Emperor were of a mind to. Damn! But Deslock smiled slightly in response, his dark eyes twinkling.
"Understood," he replied, and then gestured to the slim young girl seated at his left. "Mr. Carter, my younger daughter, Xenia."
"We've met, Father," said Xenia in a politely bored tone. "Amanda introduced us this afternoon when I went to her chambers to make certain she was all right."
"Ah," said Deslock. If he was surprised or discomfited by the news that the Earthmen had been in his daughter's private chambers that afternoon, he gave no sign of it whatsoever. He merely turned back to Amanda and said, "I regret that tonight's reception must be brief. The Volgar delegation have arrived early and wish to begin negotiations tonight." Amanda gave an understanding nod.
"The obligations of the state must come first, of course," she said.
Deslock nodded in gracious acknowledgement of his daughter's understanding, then indicated that the three arrivals should take their seats and gestured to the servants to begin serving the first course. Dinner was a rather dreary affair. Devlin was introduced to a number of admirals, generals, and whatnot, and promptly forgot all of their names. The only entertainment came from watching Amanda and Xenia snipe subtly at each other across the table while their father pretended, rather wearily, Devlin thought, not to hear them, and listening to Rina Dragonara's sotto voce critiques of the flag officers' eating, military, personal, and domestic habits. Trying not to laugh at these consumed a good portion of his energy. He noticed one unnerving thing as the dinner went on, and that was that, however much fun Rina was when talking under her breath to him or Amanda, however brightly she answered the conversation of the most boring officers at the table, whenever the table talk brought her into any sort of contact with Xenia, she stiffened palpably, looked somewhere else, and went silent.
She never spoke to Xenia directly, or even indirectly. It was as though the seat opposite Amanda were empty, as far as Rena was concerned. The contrast between that and her normal behavior was so marked that it unsettled Devlin slightly. An hour later it was over, and the three of them were alone in a corridor somewhere in the vast bulk of the palace. "That went well, Carter," said Rena encouragingly to Devlin's weary expression. "Deslock likes you. Don't you think, Amanda?" Amanda replied a bit absently. All of them were tired by this point, all of them distracted by their own weariness. As such, it is perhaps excusable that they didn't notice the servo droid coming down the corridor toward them. Such droids were an extremely commonplace sight here in the palace, after all. They were little more than motorized carts with arms to load themselves and rudimentary intelligences to guide them around the corridors. You saw them everywhere in the palace, carrying dishes, food, people's mail, linens, and what have you. They traveled at a walking pace, silently, and courteously paused for any person that happened across their path. There was nothing about them that particularly drew attention when they were acting normally. This one, on the other hand, wasn't. It came around the far corner at its usual sedate pace, swung into the hallway, and began to proceed toward them normally. But then, without warning, it accelerated, silently but violently. By the time they noticed it, it was careening toward them at an alarming speed, like an oncoming car, and with its sturdy duralloy construction and a load of crockery from the kitchens very nearly as heavy. Rena noticed it first, with a barked cry whose words meant nothing to Devlin, but whose tone was as plain as day. She rammed her shoulder against Amanda's, almost knocking the startled princess down. As they fell one way, Devlin jumped the other, but he had nothing to worry about. The robot quite visibly swerved, trying to correct its course so that it would still hit either Amanda or Rena. With the red-headed girl shielding Amanda with her body, odds were it would hit them both. With remarkable speed, Rena drew her blaster from her side. It whined twice, and the wheels on the left side of the servo droid parted company with the rest of it in a pair of bright, smoky flashes. It crashed to the floor, grinding sparkly along the alloy flag plates. The robotic cart, though crippled, was still moving fast, its intact wheels shielded from Rena's fire by its own bulk and still driving forward. But the crash bled off enough of its speed for Rena to propel Amanda out of harm's way. With a curse, she drilled one final round through the sensor cluster at the front of the robot, then jumped up, touched lightly on its upper deck, and landed behind it as it smashed into the wall. The bodyguard whirled, her weapon ready, but the servo droid had had enough. It lay, partly crumpled and shorn of two wheels, against the slightly dented wall, and smoked, not trying to move anymore. "Damn it," she said as she shoved her blaster back into its holster. "I shouldn't have made that last shot. Now we'll never prove it was tampered with. Stupid!" "Don't worry, Kit," said Amanda, dusting herself off. "You did as you saw best. Are you all right?" "Yeah, it never touched me. You?" "A bit bruised, but intact." The princess crossed to Devlin, who was just picking himself up, and helped him to his feet. "And you, Earthman? Are you whole?" "For the moment," Devlin replied. He stood and surveyed the wrecked robot. "Interesting malfunction, what?" "Yeah," said Rena sourly. "Real interesting." There came a clatter from the direction they'd come from, and a pair of armored guards jogged into view, looks of alarm on their faces and blaster rifles held at port arms. When they saw Amanda, they stopped and came to attention, looking both worried and confused. "Princess," one of them said, the taller of the two, in a puzzled tone. "We heard... What's happened here?" "It's nothing, Sergeant Crendel," Amanda replied coolly. "A servo droid malfunction. As you can see, Pilot Officer Dragonar handled it. We aren't injured. Please have a cleanup crew deal with the mess." Leaving the guards to take charge of the situation, the three continued up the corridor, round the corner, and on. Rena kept her hand hovering near her weapon, eyes wary, but no further dangers appeared. The only thing that did appear, out of a doorway a bit up on the right, was a tall young man in an elaborate uniform. Devlin supposed that part could be taken as red around here. Or rather, some of an elaborate uniform. He was barefoot, and his jacket wasn't buttoned over his slim chest. He looked up and down the hallway with a rather befuddled look on his face. At the sight of Amanda, the young man's face brightened, though it still looked a little befuddled. He smiled, turned fully to face them, and said in a rather thin, high voice, "Why, Amanda! No one told me you were back!" Amanda broke away from Rena's side and ran, actually ran, to this fellow, enfolding him in her arms with a delighted cry of, "Garen!" "Ah," thought Devlin, "this is Garen." He didn't look much like the single likeness of him Devlin had seen before, but that might be attributable to the fact that that likeness had been a rag doll with navy blue yarn for hair and translucent red buttons for eyes. The man himself, now that Devlin drew closer and had a better look at him, was in his late teens or perhaps early 20s, tall and broad-shouldered. Amanda was tall for a girl of nearly 16, but Garen was more than a head taller. Devlin would have guessed, in fact, that he was taller than Deslock, but not as burly. His face wasn't as square, either. It more resembled Amanda's than Deslock's, with the same high cheekbones and rather pointed chin, the same softly glowing scarlet eyes, and the same lacquer black hair, which really did look almost dark blue in strong light. Though where Amanda's was long, sleek, and straight, Garen's was cut short and parted like his father's. After embracing and kissing his sister, Garen turned to the others, still looking faintly confused. Devlin knew the look well, that benevolent blankness peculiar to the dim-witted upper-class twit. It was a look he himself cultivated for a variety of occasions, and despite himself he felt it creeping onto his own face now. "Garen," said Amanda, "I..."
"By crew!"
Garen blurted in a tone of cheery, slightly scandalized amazement.
"You must be the Earthman I've heard so much about."
He took a long stride toward Devlin, then squared himself, snapped his heels together, which did nothing of note since he wasn't wearing shoes, and bowed.
"Commander Sir Garen Tiltalian Dessler, of His Imperial Majesty's famed Destroyer Vengeance, at your service, sir."
Devlin returned the bow, then stuck out his hand with a slightly foolish grin.
"Carter Devlin, m'lud, or Devlin Carter, take your pick, it don't matter, of Caitlin Hutchins's glorious band, The Art of Noise."
Of course,
said Garen, who didn't quite seem to know what to make of Devlin's unit assignment.
"Well, you'll just be on your way from Dad's reception dinner, then? Hope he didn't give you the fishy stare."
No, not a bit of it, old man," Devlin insisted with blustery bonhomie. "Terrifically pleasant fellow, eh, what? Weren't for the uniform, I'd have taken him for the welcoming committee."
Garen didn't quite seem to know how to take that, either. He cocked an eyebrow quizzically, then said hastily,
"Of course. Well."
He clapped his hands together cheerily and plunged onward.
"Lovely meeting you. What was your name, Douglas?"
Satisfied with his own recollection, he nodded firmly and went on,
"Yes, delightful. Have to do it again sometime. You'll have to excuse me at present, though. Critical work to do. Matter of state security. Sure you understand."
Devlin was about to assure the Gamelon officer that he did indeed understand, when the door Garen had emerged from opened again and another figure leaned into the hallway. And what a figure! Devlin skidded to a mental and verbal halt at the sight of her. Tall, slender, scarlet-haired, she was quite lovely, quite well-built, and quite undressed, draped only in what appeared to be a bedsheet of some filmy, translucent material.
"Garen?" she inquired, her voice somewhat drowsy. "What's keeping... Oh, hello, Amanda."
Amanda inclined her head cordially.
"Cora?"
She smiled slightly. "I was just about to send Garen back to you," she said, "now that he's been introduced."
"Introduced?"
Cora blinked. The room she'd come from was dark, the corridor bright, and then her aqua eyes settled on Devlin.
"Oh, hello,"
she said. She didn't seem at all discomfited by the fact that she was standing there almost naked in front of a total stranger, and an alien stranger at that.
She smiled brightly, revealing a lot of even white teeth, and went on, "I'm Coromel."
"Oh," said Devlin. The sound, coming out of his own throat, seemed to remind him that he could speak. With that, he recovered his senses all at once, made a sweeping bow, and repeated the introduction he'd given Garin, with Malud replaced by Milady.
"Well, right," said Garin, looking doltishly embarrassed. "Good night, then, Amanda," he said, taking his sister's shoulders in his hands and bending to kiss her. The kiss went on for rather longer than an Earthman would think proper for such a thing, and Amanda, at least, seemed a bit reluctant that it end. But end it did, and Garin went on with awkward briskness.
"So I'll, talk to you tomorrow, then? Maybe you could come by after lunch."
"Certainly," said Amanda.
"Good night, then, all," said Garin. "Oh, sorry, Rena. Asinine of me not to notice you that way. Hello, how are you? Good to hear it. Good night," he said.
And then he and Cora disappeared back into the room, and the door closed behind them.
"Interesting fellow," said Devlin as they went on up the corridor, for lack of anything nicer to say. "State security, eh?" he went on, chuckling with feigned embarrassment. "I shouldn't wonder, with a state like that to secure."
"Actually, she's securing him," said Rena lightly. "That was my sister Cora."
Devlin raised an eyebrow.
"Oh?"
Rena grinned and dug him in the ribs with an elbow. "There's more than one way to interpret our family motto, Carter."
"Oh," said Devlin, blushing.
The meeting with her brother seemed to have drained all the remaining energy out of Amanda. Her shoulders drooped a bit, lowering the shoulder boards of her uniform from the horizontal, and her steps seemed to drag a bit as they moved off down the corridor. Devlin wanted to ask her what was wrong, though on the face of it it was fairly obvious, but he didn't know where to start, and the look on her face was not one that invited conversation. They'd reached an elevator. Amanda paused before it, then turned and said,
"Devlin..."
She sighed and took both of his hands, the thoughtful scowl on her face softening into an expression that was almost tender.
"Devlin, I am sorry. I want to explain all you see around you. I want to apologize for dragging you into it. I want... well, I want to do a number of things, but I haven't the energy to do anything but go to bed right now. You owe me nothing after all my stupidity has cost you today, but... will you do this one thing more for me? Will you wait until tomorrow?"
Devlin gazed back at her tired, serious face, the foolish bonhomie vanishing from his own as though a switch had been thrown.
"Of course I will," he replied quietly. Then he smiled weakly and replied, "It's not like I haven't had dumb ideas myself from time to time, what?"
Amanda gave a tired smile, then leaned forward, her eyes closing, and kissed him softly. She held his lips with hers for a few seconds, then stepped back, the elevator opening behind her, and she backed onto the threshold, still holding his hands.
"Kit," she said to Rena Dragonar, "see that he's comfortable, won't you?"
Rena grinned.
"Count on me, boss," she replied, saluting.
Amanda bowed her head gratefully to her oldest friend, released Devlin's hands, and backed the rest of the way into the elevator, allowing the doors to close before her. Devlin looked at where she had been, then sighed heavily and turned away from the doors. Rena clapped him companionably on the shoulder.
"Come on, Carter," she said. "It's not as bad as it seems."
"I hope not," Devlin replied, touching a fingertip absently to his lower lip.
"I hope not."
The room where Devlin had changed into his suit, as it turned out, wasn't really a guest chamber at all. It was part of Rena's own private quarters, which occupied the level below Amanda's apartments in the southeast tower of Deslok's palace. It simply looked like a guest room because, as Rena explained, it was the room she never used. Unlike Amanda's quarters, which were reachable only from the short hallway leading to the tower's main elevator, Rena's bedrooms had their own corridor doors,
The level her apartment was on was just below the tower's main spire, where the last of the buttresses spread off and joined the main bulk of the palace. "So," she said from the doorway, "I'm next door if you need anything. Chin up. Tomorrow will be better. Who knows? Maybe Xenia will get hit by a runaway servo droid." "Life," Devlin observed dryly, "is rarely so convenient." "Isn't that the truth?" "Night, Carter," she said. He raised a hand in parting, and she closed the door. Devlin took off his suit, hung it up, turned off the lights, and climbed into bed. He lay on his back with his hands behind his head, looking up into the dark of the four-poster's canopy, and considered the last 24 hours. He blinked at that thought, raised his arm, and pressed the stud that illuminated his watch's face. Back in Worcester, it was 1:30 in the morning. No wonder he was so tired. That spacefold had meant they'd arrived on Gamelon in the middle of the morning, after having left Earth in the early afternoon. Well, all right. He could sleep now, and tomorrow he'd find out what the hell was going on. Fair enough. Fine. Tired as he was, it still took him a long time to get to sleep. It seemed at the time as if he'd just dropped off to sleep when Devlin was slammed awake again by a surge of adrenaline that propelled his body entirely out of bed before his conscious mind caught up. He stood for a few moments, his hand thrust into the pocket of his coat, breathing hard and feeling sweat cooling on his lean, well, skinny, really, body, and stared into the darkness of the bedroom. What had awakened him? Was there someone here with him? He had a feeling of personal danger that was almost overwhelming, but he seemed to be alone. Had he had a dream, already forgotten, that had triggered this sudden, violent awakening? Something above his head went thump. He looked up, seeing nothing in the dark. What was up there? The ceiling. The floor of the room above. One of Amanda's rooms. "Rena!" Devlin bellowed, grabbing up his coat and running into the common room. He barked his shin painfully on the low table in front of the couch, cursed, and Hobble ran the rest of the way to Rena's door, pounding at the signal button. "Rena, wake up!" A sliver of light appeared under the door, and then it hissed open. Devlin drew back, his dark-adjusted eyes dazzled, and through his fingers saw Rena Dragonar, naked except for a pair of utilitarian white underpants, looking out at him with an expression of controlled alarm. "What?" she inquired, her voice tense. "Upstairs," said Devlin, ignoring her toplessness completely and grabbing her arm. "Hurry!" She reached with her free arm and snagged her gun belt, but made no other demur or delay. Something in the Earthman's eyes, or his voice, or both, convinced her that there was to be no hesitation. The two of them ran to the corridor, Devlin shrugging into his coat as Rena belted on her blaster, but no elevator came to their summons. Snarling, Rena smashed open the emergency access panel and tripped the control that opened the doors onto the empty shaft, then jumped across onto the maintenance ladder. Devlin Carter, self-avowed coward, by his own assertion completely useless at any athletic activity, followed her without a sound or a moment's hesitation. She climbed up to the next level, plied the emergency door control there, then swung out into the corridor, rolling almost soundlessly into a battle-ready crouch. Devlin followed her somewhat less gracefully, but no less effectively, and the two of them went to the other door at the end of the short hall. The door didn't open to Rena's touch against the activator. She scowled, flipped open an access panel, and punched in an override code. When that didn't work, her scowl deepened, and she tried another. This one was successful, and the two of them burst into the room beyond. The questions they were going to call out died on their lips as they took it in. The room was in chaos. Couches overturned, bookshelves toppled, the glass and chrome coffee table destroyed. There were burn marks and scars of melee combat on the walls and floor. In the middle of the room, atop the squashed remnants of the coffee table, lay the body of a man. He had a rather surprised look on his face. Some part of Devlin's mind wondered idly if that had more to do with his missing right arm, or the gladius sticking out of his chest. Rena spat out a curse, drew her blaster, and ran across the room. The door of Amanda's bedroom stood open. It couldn't close because there was another body in the doorway, this one lacking a head. Devlin stood in the common room for a moment longer, hesitating, then turned and went the other way, yelling for Rena to come this way instead. As Amanda's bedroom appeared to contain nothing but still another corpse, a woman's but not Amanda's, Rena did that thing, and they piled into the other bedroom almost together. Amanda's apartments were laid out the same as Rena's, and in both cases they used the bedroom on the east side of the tower, leaving the south room empty. This, then, was the room directly above Devlin's. It was, in fact, almost identical, except for the lack of a corridor door. Devlin scanned the room, then cursed. Amanda Dessler lay on the floor next to the bed, face down, her head surrounded by a pool of blood. One of her hands was pinned underneath her, the other, still holding a blaster, outstretched before her. Rena went to her side, knelt down, and put two fingers to the side of her throat.
"Still alive," she said. "Thank Dulshaya."
Devlin stood near the doorway, almost quivering. For a second, glancing back at him, Rena thought he was being overcome by the sight of so much carnage, of Amanda sprawled and bloodied, until she noted his face, his eyes. He was staring with fixed and burning intensity at the room's French window, which led out onto a small balcony overlooking the Grand Plaza and part of the city. Rena was a little puzzled by that. There was no one there, until she realized that he wasn't looking at the window. He was looking at the draperies next to the window.
"Still there, you bastard," he murmured suddenly,
the anger in his voice making it deeper, thicker than normal.
"Boxed you in, didn't we? Can't go out the window. It's a long way down, isn't it? Isn't it?"
Behind the draperies, something jerked, and there came a muffled grunt like a man being struck.
"Come out of there," Devlin snarled. "Come out!"
From behind the drapes, a figure emerged, moving jerkily, like a puppet with tangled strings. It was a man, a gamelan, dressed in the same sort of black jumpsuit as the three corpses. He had a minor blaster burn on one upper arm, and seemed to be unarmed, but he was a lot bigger than Devlin. There was no reason Rena could see for the fear in his eyes as he faced the shorter, skinnier Earthman, who would have cut a rather ridiculous figure in only striped boxer shorts and an old gray raincoat, if not for the look in his eyes.
"Right," said Devlin furiously, taking a step toward the gamelan. "Who sent you? As if I didn't know."
The man in the black jumpsuit didn't answer, but Devlin suddenly gave him a cold, rather frightening smile all the same, nodding with satisfaction. Sweating and trembling, the would-be assassin turned and yanked open the French window. Devlin, taken aback, shouted for him to stop, but before he or Rena could move, the man had thrown himself from the balcony with a piteous scream. Devlin went to the rail and looked down, then slumped to his knees, breathing hard. Rena got up and went to the telephone to summon a medic. Within 5 minutes, Amanda's apartment was swarming with people in uniforms. The medics came, packed up the wounded princess, and vanished almost immediately. The guardsmen, embarrassed and surly, stayed longer, and were almost brutal in their interrogation of the Earthman until Rena Dragonar, who had borrowed one of Amanda's shirts before the horde arrived, told them that if they didn't back off, she would gut them. Not long after that, Garen Dessler arrived, shirtless, wringing his hands and getting in the way, as the investigators tried to figure out what had happened before Rena and Devlin arrived. Rena drew Amanda's brother aside, and for a few moments she seemed to be trying to calm the poor man, who was all a flutter. Eventually, if she failed to calm him down, she at least got him to leave. And then she crossed back to Devlin, who was being put through it again by one of the grumpy guardsmen.
"So, tell me again how you knew the princess was in trouble," growled the short, grizzled, balding investigator.
"I heard a noise," Devlin replied for the nth time.
"Where were you?" the investigator asked. "Not in here."
"Downstairs," Devlin replied wearily.
I was sleeping in Pilot Officer Dragonar's spare room.
That's Pilot Officer Kitarina Dragonar.
Devlin fought down the urge to say, no, Pilot Officer Winston Churchill, bloody Dragonar, and replied instead, yes.
What's your connection with...
the investigator began, but Rena shouldered him out of the way, making her ample chest, crammed into a shirt tailored for Amanda's somewhat more modest proportions, bounce interestingly, had Devlin not been too preoccupied to notice, and snapped, if you must know, he's my boy toy, Ridgiger. And he's 10 times the man you are, if what I hear is accurate. Now, if you'll excuse us, Prince Garen wants to have a word with him. Come on, Carter. Investigator Ridgiger sputtered ineffectually as Rena led Devlin through the common room, out the door, and into the elevator.
Thought you didn't fish that side of the pond, Devlin observed, weakly but gamely.
Rena grinned. Hadn't met you yet, had I? She replied, poking him with an elbow. He glanced at her, seemed to realize, finally, how she was dressed, and how she'd been dressed throughout the incident, and blushed bright red. Anyway, she went on, Gamelon men generally come in 2 varieties, ineffectual fop or macho cretin. Is it any wonder we girls turn to each other?
Quite, said Devlin.
That's cool how you can turn all red like that.
Well, said Devlin, it's not so much a matter of can,